how did you get into what's your background? How did you even get into this business and why?
Sure. Well, like a lot of people in water, you kind of fall into it, and I did as well. And then fell in love with it and didn't want to leave the industry. But originally, way back when, I have a degree in journalism with a emphasis in public relations, and went to work for an agricultural organization right out of school and did that for 9 years. It was a nonprofit. Loved doing that. Did advocacy work for them and engagement work, media relations, all that good stuff. And then needed to earn a little bit more money to support my family. So I left the nonprofit world and landed at the city of Aurora, Colorado, in their city manager's office and did public information officer work for them. So lots of media relations and public relations. And in 2002, Colorado had a massive drought that landed here, and I got real busy helping the water utility out and just really enjoyed engaging with customers and the technical work they were doing. And then kind of started working full time for the water utility very soon after that drought hit. And that was such a unique time in any utility when you deal with a crisis, because it really focuses everybody on one thing. And that was, just an awesome, for lack of a better word, team building exercise, even when you're in the state of crisis. And my utility at that time got to about 9 months of being totally dry for a city of 300,000 people. And my job was to get our customers to stop using water, which is a very strange business model, as you all know. I did over 750 media interviews in that time for the utility, from as far away as the BBC in the UK. We had put people on restrictions so that they could not water or irrigate outside. And folks in the UK who loved their gardens were kind of shocked that we were not allowing people to garden. So they came over several times and checked us out. But all of that was designed to get people to really understand the seriousness of the issue and to rally behind the cause. And that really kind of led my entree into working in the water and the wastewater side of things as well. The city of Aurora does have wastewater and recycled water, and so I got a little bit of that background as well. So that's how I got started in the industry.
So, for many, many years, back when I started in the business, the philosophy was keep your head down. If you keep your head in the sand, you're out of sight and out of mind, and things just rock along. But it appears that things have changed a lot recently, that perhaps that strategy might not be the best. Can you talk a little bit about that little bit of a shift and how we need to be ahead of things as opposed to keeping our head down?
Absolutely. And that's true. I mean, water utilities, they can't have bad days, right? So everything has to be 100% on, or else people get sick or we cause environmental harm. So we're very good at what we do, and for a very long time the public trusted us to be very good at what we do. And we'd have incidents here and there, like a drought or God forbid an outbreak of some illness, but what truly has changed over the last 5 years is that we've had a number of crises involving water, whether that's water quality or lack of water. And then on top of that, social media. People are looking for a different way to get their news source, whether it's accurate or inaccurate. They can find all kinds of ways to get information now where 10, 15 years ago, that was not the case. And then lastly, I think our municipalities and our water and wastewater utilities are absolutely desperate to invest in infrastructure. We've reached a time where we have got to spend money and put projects into the ground and grow to support our populations and the changes that are occurring. And all of those things have kind of hit at a crossroads for municipalities and water utilities, are often led by incredibly smart people who are very technically amazing, but maybe not that they didn't go to school for communication. And so that kind of nexus has occurred, and we have a lot of municipalities and water utilities that are a little bit behind in getting out and communicating with the publics that they serve.
How do you convince or urge or nudge folks who are still in that old paradigm, if you will, of things will be better if we're not out front, to for those folks to understand the importance of actually telling the story and telling the story before there is a crisis?
Yeah, I've had lots of experience of that gentle nudge to the engineer or the CFO that we'd be a lot better off if we proactively went and talked about what we're going to be doing in the solution and in fact involving the public in that will get better solutions moving forward. And that is not always an easy discussion or an easy sell. And so what I tend to do is point to examples of others that have done this and kind of gain a foothold within the organization that reputationally they're going to be better off. Sometimes one of the best advocates for this is the board or the elected city council who tend to be a little bit more in touch with what the community is talking about, what the community concerns are. Certainly they have an interest in public service, or they wouldn't be serving on that. And so that can be a nice way to segue into, we need to engage the public on this issue, or we need a strategic communication plan. The other way to open that door is to simply talk about maybe not the big project or the elephant in the room that we're going to be doing in the future, but let's talk about the positive things that we're doing today. Let's just inform the public about what it is that we do day in, day out to protect public health, to protect the environment, and ensure that they know that they're at least informed, you know, who their provider is, and what services we provide, just to lay that groundwork. So that when we get to the project that we're going to be doing, there's at least some positive feedback that's out into the community on that. And then the third way is to start with identifying who the decision makers and the stakeholders are within the community, not necessarily the general public, but is there a business chamber that we could become members of and start communications with? Is there a Rotary Club? Is there a sister municipal agencies that are in the community, organizations, NGOs that could be helpful in the future, and we could start building relationships with them so that you start gathering supporters around that utility manager, and it becomes a much more comfortable scenario for them.
It's interesting, and just to let you talk just a tad more about it, you've talked a lot about building a base and communicating even when there's not a specific problem, issue, or something going on. Can you talk just a tad more about how important it is to be have an ongoing communications program and how it builds a real base of support even without a big issue going on at any one time?
Yes, it's really a best practice, frankly, to have an ongoing drumbeat in your community about what it is that you do. Whether that is something that you just schedule monthly to put content up on your website, whether it is a regular series of presentations that you do in the community, or you set up a speakers bureau so that you're out telling positive stories about what it is that you do every day. Because the last thing you want to do is meet your constituency and meet your customers when you got to ask them for something and they don't know who you are. That's what gets municipalities and utilities into trouble, is the first time out the gate, the public hasn't heard from you in 18 months, and it's to ask for a rate increase, or it's to talk about a project that's going to be have a lot of impactful construction in a busy roadway. And they don't know what you do or what the benefit of that is to them because they've not heard from you. And so having that regular drumbeat of positive communication can really lay the foundation for those asks that can come in the future.
Can you think of a time when you've been working either with the city or with the utility that you had a particular victory, and I'm in the communications public information realm, where you thought the communications piece was just absolutely singing? And can you describe that situation where you can claim it was a victory and say why, what happened, what was the key to that victory?
Sure. I worked on a project that was a potable reuse project. So it was the first time potable reuse would be used as a new water source for a community. And anytime you're working on potable reuse, we know that we have the technology to make this work and make it safe. But it's about public perception.
Sure.
It's about
what
people think about that water source and how you describe it to them. And if you don't do it right at the get-go, you're not going to get very far on this, even if you can build an amazing project. And so these projects are ripe for contention if you don't step out right. So this particular project, at the get-go, the name of the project was named after it was named after the South Platte River. And as the communication lead on the project, I kept talking about how even just what we call this project needs to be palatable to the public. And so I was concerned that the South Platte River here on the Front Range of Colorado did not have a positive connotation in our customers' minds, that is someplace where they want to get water from. And we actually, I convinced our leadership to do some focus groups on various topics, how we talk about the project, words that we use, and even the name of the project. And I think that was very enlightening. We ended up renaming the project to the Prairie Waters Project, which sounds, and that was because we had actual human beings in a focus group room that talked about how South Platte made them feel that homeless people were bathing in the water and that they were doing things and that there were things in the water that they didn't want to drink. So that was that, you know, if we had kept going down that path, we would have really shot ourselves in the foot, even with just the project name. We ended up doing a lot of site tours with stakeholders as well. So that project went through three counties with a pipeline, and we brought county commissioners out. We needed to get permitting from them, talked about this water source. I mean, they certainly weren't getting anything from the project because it benefited a different community. But they were intrigued by the novelty of it and that it was a solution to drought. And also did a lot of taste tests on that water to see what level of TDS, total dissolved solids, would be palatable to consumers with that new water source, and made sure that our technical folks could dial that in and that we weren't going to have problems later on. We even went to the stage where when we turned that project on, that we told folks we had it turned on. When we didn't have, we waited an extra month before we turned it on to see if we got public perception concerns where people were reporting any kind of issues with their water. Thankfully we didn't, but other utilities have had that experience. And just to be sure, we did that. And that project is ongoing today. It's seen as a real shining example of how that can be done in the dry West.
Sure. And the communications piece was as critical as any of the engineering parts.
I believe so.
Yeah.
It's a pretty awesome looking treatment plan and project too, I gotta say. The engineers knew their stuff.
You may have already hit on this, but let's take the reverse of that. Have you ever been involved in any project that went sour because of the communications not being in place correctly? Or were you able to avert a disaster that was going to be a communications disaster?
Sure. Well, on the going south piece, I worked for a utility that had plans to expand a dam and enlarge a dam and triple the size of a reservoir in a community that would not benefit from that project. And that's a really impactful construction project, obviously. This is in the foothills of Colorado, in an area that the community is very environmentally sensitive. And that project needed federal permitting. And the utility had been burned by doing federal permitting in the past and felt like they had spent a lot of money getting things put together, millions of dollars, only to have projects not be approved by regulatory bodies. And so they felt like they wanted to go under the radar on this and get, as far as they can in the permitting process before doing a public engagement process, and really just use the federal permitting process as the public engagement process. And if anyone's ever worked on those, you'll be familiar with the public agency meetings where people have 3 minutes to speak, and it's not exactly what I would call a robust public engagement process, nor does it allow the utility to really listen to the public, because it's frankly negative. And so they did that for several years, and unfortunately, the resentment in the community really built up that nobody was listening to them, that they had to go through federal agencies, that there was no communication with the water utility. The utility actually had a working reservoir on the site, and there was a lot of feeling of the people who worked there, that worked for the utility, were not friendly. They didn't, wave as they drove by. There was kind of a lot of resentment in the community. And so, as the permitting process started working through, and the permits, it took a very long time. This is a project that's 13 years into a federal permitting process, and still not done with that. We convinced them that we need to do some public engagement. We have to get out and talk to the community, or we're going to have some lawsuits on our hands. We may end up with lawsuits anyway, but we'll at least better understand where they're at. And we had a project engineer that really liked the idea. He wanted to get out into the community. He was good with the community, and so we had to really walk back a lot of what had been done in the past, start over with the community, which was extremely neutral, and we were or extremely negative. We were trying to get them to neutral on the actual project, and had been reasonably successful in getting there. We started doing listening sessions up in the community, being very present. We'd just show up at a local coffee shop and put a sign up on our table saying, "Ask me about this project," to kind of engage with people. And we ended up actually developing we put a yurt out on that site. I don't know if you're familiar with that, what that is, but I think it's the first public information yurt ever. So instead of a construction trailer, we have a tent, a round tent with canvas sides, and that's the public information yurt that's out there on site. And it's actually a very, very common thing. Yurts are very common in that part of the country. So trying to be creative and reaching out and moving that community to a more neutral place after many years of just ignoring their concerns.
Yeah, it's as you're talking, I'm thinking about two or three times when disaster about hit with us in Charlotte. And sometime I'll tell you about our pontoon boat strategy. It's interesting how communications can take a lot of different forms, from the very formal to sitting on a pontoon boat with the right stakeholders and a beer in your hand in order to be able to solve a major bi-state problem. So
Wow, that sounds great.
you just never know where something might actually avert a disaster. But
Right.
that's a story for another time. So social media has really changed the way we communicate. Can you talk a little bit about the place for social media and the importance of it and effective use of it?
Absolutely. Social media is the preferred news source now. Like it or hate it, the vast majority of the United States is on social media, they're actively using it. They may not tell you that's their preferred news source, but it certainly is. We see that 80% of adults, U.S. adults, are on Facebook, and the biggest growing population for that are those that are 62 and older. Nextdoor, which is fairly new, it's only been out 5 or 6 years. Nextdoor is a social media app that is like Facebook, but for your neighborhood. And you don't get to choose who's on it. It's regional, and you have to live in the neighborhood to see it. And it is in 75% of US neighborhoods. I have worked on projects where we have better data using Nextdoor in some communities than we do using the utility's own email lists. They just have better coverage on social media. So we know people are using it. We know they're active on it, but yet municipalities, and in particular water and wastewater utilities, have been very slow to get onto social media and to use it effectively. Very few utilities have developed a actual strategic social media plan, and what that means is that your consumers and your customers are actually having conversations, perhaps about you, but they're getting their information from somewhere else and not you, and that information's probably wrong because they can't engage with you and they can't find you, and so they're seeking information and they're getting it. But because you're not in the marketplace, you either are not hearing about it, or you hear about it from one of your employees that saw something that happened, or it's just happening. And the other thing that social media, I think, has done is that between social media's prevalence and that we've had some crises in our industry, public trust in water utilities, and in fact in government as a whole, is evolving, and not in a good way. And so we're seeing lots of city officials describe that that public discourse in their community is negative, coarse, rude, sometimes strident. And social media, of course, does encourage that type of behavior. It's just a lot easier to be not so nice to somebody when you aren't talking to them face to face. And so you have all those things converging where people are sharing not exactly accurate information, and they're sharing it in not a nice way. And a water utility may be completely unaware that's happening until it reaches a real strident level. And there's been several times when I've been called in to facilitate public meetings because of something that started on social media, because of a next door misinformation that's being perpetuated, and we've got hundreds of people on a social media platform demanding some action from a municipality or water utility, and then a public meeting has to happen. And I would say if we could be out front of that, we can correct misinformation quickly, and we could be a source of news and information that's a trusted source. And so getting out in front of that and having a regular conversation and ability to connect with our customers in a place they want to connect in is very helpful.
Well, you just raised the issue that how do you balance the use of social media with face-to-face contact when nothing can beat sitting across the table or standing there talking to someone and having a conversation?
I would say you can actually combine those things, and with the use of video, can be very helpful. But of course, one way is if a utility is working through Facebook or Twitter, Nextdoor, where they're regularly trying to make sure they're picking up on customer concerns, they can offload those people into a one-on-one conversation so not everything is being seen by the entire social media community, and then start having those conversations one-on-one, which really helps. But it all goes together, of course. You have to have those relationships in place, and that gets back to my earlier point of we need to have positive community trust and relationship is built, and that will only occur as if you're reaching out to those decision makers, key leaders in your community, getting their support and buy-in well before you're asking them for anything, so that they can help be your surrogates almost in those communities as well.
Finding those stakeholders and those advocates that you can work through.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. What do you see as the role of consultants in assisting public organizations with communications?
I think utilities and municipalities of all sizes can benefit from consultants on communications, and it really depends on what your resources are within your own organization. So, let's say you're a smaller wastewater utility. You've got a few staff, none of which are communication people. That's a very common setup. But you're kind of tasked with communication duties. I mean, you got to talk to people, and you got to talk with customers. And in that case, a consultant could kind of fill the role of on-site staff for utility. Maybe it's something that you bring someone in as a consultant to help you develop an overall strategic communication plan that you yourself can implement, and do some training with staff on some basic communication principles. And then you could use that consultant perhaps on retainer or something when issues arise or to have them do some of the work that you wouldn't be able to do in-house. Maybe it's a regular update on your website, or it's a presentation that they develop so that you can give it in your community. Those type of things on a smaller side. Those municipalities, utilities that have staff on site, that have communication staff, sometimes there's a knowledge gap that exists. Maybe you have a municipal-based public information officer that does your communication work, but you're on the water or wastewater side, and that PIO at the city, you know, they know who you are, but you feel like you might be competing against all the other things that are happening in the city for their attention, for their newsletters that are going out, or the content on the website. And they're missing, that PIO is kind of missing that water background. And so in that case, a consultant could come in and help develop that, either with the PIO or with the utility staff to fill that need. And focus, you know, encourage the focus on the service that's being provided by the water utility.
Right.
And then lastly, I see the use of a consultant on these unfamiliar issues that come up. Maybe there's a water quality crisis. Over the last several years, we've had a lot of discussion about lead in drinking water in the water industry. And if you've got lead service lines or any kind of lead in household plumbing in your community, and this is an issue for you, that's kind of a new thing, and it may be something that's well beyond what your current staff has the capacity to do. So those kind of unfamiliar issues, or maybe there's a new venture, you've decided that you want to change your rate structure after many years, and we're going to go through a whole research process. You want to do some customer research, you want to do some advocacy work on that. And that might be a good time to bring in a consultant, or any kind of pressing issue that comes up. Crisis communications, also a great time to use a consultant, whether that means preparing the crisis communication plan in advance and training staff on that. In those cases, the consultant can really kind of help emphasize what the staff resources that you already have there and make them more effective.
We've talked a lot about external communication. What about internal communications?
Yes. Sometimes, despite our best intents, we realize that our human resources are probably the best resources we have, but they're easy to forget about because they might be down the hall or in another facility across the city. And internal communication, making sure that your own staff is up to speed, understands what's happening in your organization, and can answer questions, is really critical. And it's so funny, and this is not something that is water, wastewater utilities, municipalities are alone in. This is a overarching problem in any organization is that internal communication, you can never do enough of it. And it really is truly an easy thing to forget that just because you know something doesn't mean that your coworkers know something or your board knows what's going on too. So of course, I would include your board or your city council within that internal communication effort. And there is such a thing as an internal communication plan. So you can actually plan out where you want to get to and take the pulse of your organization and what they, how engaged they are in your organization, and whether they're your strongest advocates out in the community. They should be. If you don't know whether they are or not, that would be a good indicator that you may want to take a look at your internal communication planning, and start doing some things to help engage them and make sure that they are your advocates.
Yeah, it always amazes me. Every place we go, employees talk about they would like to have more communications within the organization about what is going on that affects them in doing their job, number one. And then number two, what you talked about, and that is that every employee is a communications person to the public. The public gets their perception or feelings about an organization based on the last person they talked to, and often that's a field person. So those internal communications are really essential to the perception that a utility has in the community.
So true. The last thing you want is, for your employee to be at a barbecue and get asked something about your organization, and they shrug their shoulders and say, "I don't know. They never tell me anything." And I think we all know that happens.
Yep, they are our public information representatives and customer service people, every employee. Okay, three quick items here. Tips. If you were going to give one, two, or three tips to consultants about communicating in writing, whether it be in a report they're writing or a proposal, what are the one or two key tips about communicating effectively in the written mode?
Sure. Well, when we're writing and we're writing for an audience, you need to clearly define who that audience is. So if we're writing for the public or we're writing for a non-technical audience, you need to use language that makes sense. So I'm a big advocate of keeping written communication simple, concise. Less is more, and sometimes it's harder to write less. Sometimes it's much easier to just be throw everything into a document and let the reader wade through it, but that's not the case. The other thing I would say is we the more and more people are looking for infographics, and they want to get their information through pictures and small bursts of text rather than long, lengthy paragraphs. And if you think about how you read online, that's what your eye is attracted to. And so we need to be thinking about, as we write reports and proposals and documents, how can we make them graphically interesting and draw the reader in, rather than making the reader wade through long paragraphs. That might be very technically accurate, but they may be missing the point of where you're going.
Clear, concise, and free of ambiguity. That's kind of my mantra about.
Yes.
It's interesting what you just said. We gave a report to Metro Water Reclamation District out your way in Denver. We were at the board and we were presenting on the results or what we had done with the strategic plan and the vision, mission, and values. And one of the board members was on the steering committee that did it. So, vision, mission, and values, of course, it's not very long. We worked months and months and months to get there. And he sat there and finally said, "You know, folks," he said, "it doesn't, we worked hard on this and it doesn't look like there's a whole lot up there." He said, "But very frankly, if we'd have had more time, we could have said in even less words." So, only thing less is more, and it's hard to get there to be clear and concise by while you're doing that.
That is very true. And that follows with presentations too. I often see people giving presentations where you're reading the bullets, or the bullets are on the, you're saying the same thing that's on the slides. And I think for, especially for non-technical audiences, the preference is for an image in one sentence. And then they can really truly listen to what it is that you're saying to them and not be trying to be distracted by reading what's on the screen.
Well, it's interesting you should go there because I was going to ask the same question about use of PowerPoint. One or two key tips.
Well, certain, that would be my preference, is that we move. We're an industry that really likes to show graphs and say, you probably can't see this, but this is what it shows on there. I much prefer to show an image that may be emotionally striking, because you want to connect with your audience, and then just put a sentence at the top or a few keywords at the top while you talk about that. And that means you have to be really well prepared to give your presentation. You can't, do it the night before and show up and read from it. So that presents a challenge for the presenter, but it does create a better connection, and it's a much more memorable presentation for the audience. And if you ever have a chance to listen to TED Talks, so that's how they, those presenters are, of course, some of the best in the country, and on interesting topics, of course, as well. Sometimes our topics are not quite as interesting, but you'll see that. You'll see there's just an image, and there are very few slides, and your focus is on the presentation, how the person is presenting and their expressions, and not on reading a slide.
Okay. And I had the same question about verbal, giving talks or presentations, and not specifically use of PowerPoint, but just the verbal. A couple of tips on effective presentations.
Sure. I find when I'm working with executives in particular, but often with technical folks too, that we talk too much when we're in a setting where we really ought to be listening. And I've worked with a CFO in the past where we were engaging in the pub with the public, kind of on a dicey topic, and they had a lot that they wanted to say to us. And we had our first meeting, and we had prepped for the meeting, and I had said, we're going to listen, we're going to listen. And we got in the meeting, and the CFO spent, out of the hour, spent 45 minutes of it speaking. It was not intentional, but it can be off-putting to people when you're there to be listened to. And so I actually do a strategy where if I'm in a meeting for an hour, two-thirds of that hour ought to be listening to people and not actually or asking questions so that I can get their feedback on it. And you'll just build relationships so much faster. People love to talk to you about things and
Exactly right.
engage. So be quiet and open your ears, and actually, look at the person. It's okay to take a few notes, but really listening and developing some questions in advance. I think you'll do better when you do a presentation verbally with people.
Okay. So why would you tell a young person that they should should undertake a profession in communications for public sector agencies?
Well, I would say that my work is extremely diverse, and there's not a day that goes by that's like the day before. And I still, after 20 plus years of doing this, find new challenges, new technologies, new ways of doing things. If you're a learner and you like to engage, and if you like strategy, that's what communications is. It's strategy. And so it's determining the best way to get to the end result that you want to get to, by putting in place a bunch of strategies and tactics that will take you there. It's always funny when I've interviewed people for positions, I almost always throw out the folks that say, well, I want to be in communications because I really like people.
That's true.
That's not what this is about. It's nice to like people, But you really are taking strategies and putting in place a path and a plan to get to the next goal. And you're doing that through relationship building and communication. And I just find that it's a really fascinating industry that I work in.
I suppose you'd have the same reaction if they said because they like to talk.
Yes.
Right, just a couple of other really quick things. I'll put you on the spot. You're working, you're the communications person, but you're working with the utility director, and you just had a budget session to recommend a rate increase in order to do all sorts of wonderful things, capital, operating, or whatever. And you walk out of the council chamber and the news media. The television station comes up, puts a camera in your face because the director said you're going to answer the question, and says to you, a rate increase that will impact a lot of people. Tell us why this is important and why people ought to feel good about this. What is your sound bite?
Oh gosh, well, I would have developed those in advance, but
Which is what we do teach. I get that, but in any case.
I would have developed those in advance. I would aim for we always teach people to do three top messages, right? And in that case, you're going to talk about the benefits to the community. So hopefully, in this case, you're trying to solve a problem. And so you're going to talk about how you're going to solve that problem by investing in whatever that infrastructure is, whether it's a new water source or you've had stormwater issues and you're going to fix that problem that's been a thorn in the community side, right? The second thing you're going to talk about is how the governing body for the utility really wanted to make sure that this was the least cost possible and that they are being transparent and that all of the that they really went through the best way to do this, slow and steady rate increases, those type of things, rather than a giant increase unless there's some kind of crisis that you're trying to solve. And then third is you're going to talk about how it impacts people directly. And so you're going to put that into dollars and cents and not percentages. So if you say your bill's going to go up 5%, that may sound like a lot to some people, but if you say it's going to go up $1.50 per month, that's a much more palatable message. And so you're going to put those in terms and that the funding is paying for whatever it is that the funding is paying for.